Sorry.
Okay. I would like to sort of label my comments. I'm Ted Weisgall from KPFT. And, I would like to label my comments regarding what was left out by talking about a certain degree of narcissism that perhaps pervades the national board, and hopefully you will be able to throw off that narcissism. I want to really talk about committees and underscore what was just said by Deb, and also talk about how the committees will operate. We are not talking about committees that are made up of members of the local board. We are talking about committees that are made up of station members. We are suggesting that these committees, some of which would be open to the people from the community, would set the basic direction of the stations. We just recently had a process of selecting a new program director. And you can ask Dwayne Bradley during his report tomorrow how that process went. But he included people from his staff, people from the community, and then himself in finally making the decision. And he was totally blown away by the number of hours that these individuals put in and helping him to come to his final decision in terms of this. We think that you all need to look at standing rules and policies and procedures as the whole process is osmosised up from the bottom. We haven't had a chance to work through that aspect of the process. I will yield.
Thank you.
Hi. You just heard Debbie Campbell talk about conflicts in between the final document called the KPFT Lab Bylaws Proposal and some of the work of our committee. I'm Ken Freeland, and I'll be speaking for the dissenters to that final document. The early months of our committee's work were slow and sluggish, like an old steam engine puffing its way up a steep hill. In spite of ourselves, we managed to sift through an immense number of issues, giving each careful attention. The minutes of each meeting were posted to our committee's email listservs for easy access by all committee members, and on May 17th, my proposal that only approved minutes of the committee be forwarded to Carol was approved by a vote of 15-1. The agenda for each upcoming meeting was announced and posted to our group listserv in advance of each meeting so that all committee members knew when the various topics were slated for consideration and polling and could decide to attend or not accordingly. This practice obtained from the meeting of March 26th to the meeting of July 26th, a four-month period. Shortly afterwards, the committee moved into its compilation phase. Everyone expected it would be a breezy downhill ride to assemble our collected polls on the various issues into bylaws language and to sign off on the final document. But our downhill ride soon became a runaway train that somehow managed to crash into itself. There are no minutes listed in our group files during the entire months of August and September. There is no record of announcements of upcoming meetings there. Nowhere else were these meetings publicized that I know of, nor were agendas published in advance of these meetings. Several proposals were put forward at these later meetings and adopted by those present, who were only supposed to be compiling the committee's established opinions, and a number of them contradicted the earlier work of the committee. I formally requested the final language of some of these proposals. My request went unanswered for days. Imagine my surprise when I learned that not only had a set of bylaws meanwhile been released in the name of this committee, not only was it unavailable on the listservs, but that while most of the committee were still in the dark, IPNB member Rob Robinson was so well informed of its contents that he proposed it to the IPNB for use as a template for further bylaws discussion, and his proposal was adopted. I immediately protested the promulgation of this bylaws proposal under the name of our committee to the National Bylaws List, and Leslie Kagan was kind enough to forward this concern to all IPNB members. A number of committee members requested a meeting of our formal at our normal Friday meeting time to discuss this issue. This was denied by Greg Gieselman, appointed regent for IPNB chair of this committee, George Barnstone. However, a meeting was scheduled for Sunday, though Greg Gieselman insists that the agenda for this meeting would exclude such discussion. Nonetheless, 10 out of 21 committee members present voted in favor of rescinding those parts of this published bylaws proposal that disagreed with the committee's recorded opinions. You have before you copies of a petition signed by 14 of our committee members asking that those parts of this bylaws proposal which contradict our work not be considered by the Bylaws Revision Committee. All the language listed under Article 4, Section 5, diversity, are inconsistent with the minuted work of our committee, which called for lab monitoring of community representation as part of its periodic community needs assessment and targeted outreach to communities it identified as underrepresented. There are also two provisions regarding the manner of selection of PNB members, which contradict or are not supported by our settled positions as documented by the attached records of our work. I speak for the majority of our committee in requesting that Pacifica's final bylaws not contain provisions to fix our board elections by means of the use of quotas. Such an approach would mirror George W. Bush's attempt to tell the people of Palestine whom they may and may not elect in so-called democracy he claims to be anxious to establish for them. Last week, Egyptian Foreign Minister Ahmed Maher replied to Bush, "You cannot have democratic elections, the results of which you determine in advance." Can we who grew up in a country purportedly democratic be ourselves incapable of this wise affirmation of what democracy basically means? I thank you for your attention this morning. Dissent is not often an easy task, but it is facilitated when provision is made for it, and I thank Carol for doing so. I ask that you consider what I've said, the petition before you, and remove from our consideration those parts of the so-called KPFT bylaws proposal I've identified that the documentation you've received clearly demonstrates does not represent the many months of our committee's careful work, and likewise, any and all provisions which refer incredibly to language not to be provided at a future date. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. And one more person.
Okay, thank you. Diallo Kintambu, member of the Houston Lab. You've heard a lot of details of what should be put into new Pacifica bylaws. I want to speak to you about two issues that I think are of parallel importance in the bylaws, and that is the process and the dialogue. First, the process. Here in Houston, the committee process was used to produce a set of bylaws that was clearly, and admit, not the bylaws, but the process itself was clearly flawed. In an effort to be democratic and unrestrained and encumbered by process, the committee was completely open. Anyone was permitted to show up at any time. No minimum attendance rules were required. Someone could attend a single meeting, vote on the most critical issue, disappear, and never be seen again. Historical knowledge of previous decisions and agreements were often conveyed, were often not conveyed to new participants. Confusion and disorder were always close by. However, it must be stated that the dedicated volunteers that consistently showed up to hammer away at the bylaws was inspirational. To watch most people who were inexperienced put in that kind of time, sometimes 10, 12 hours straight, was a wonderful thing to see. But I would suggest that in the final set of bylaws that you put together, that process be a major part of that, because process in the future will determine if Pacifica survives or not. The process is just as important as anything else. And there's one other final issue, and that is dialogue. I watched as the old Pacifica was happily overturned, and the new Pacifica struggled to define itself, and dialogue has become increasingly counterproductive. I believe that one of the things that's missing is that we don't have space on the airways here in Houston to discuss what we're about, where we should be going, and what it means to be Pacifican. I'd like to encourage you to think about opening up that space so that we can actually talk about it and try to come to some agreement on who we are and not have so much vitriol as we've had in the past. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Thank you very much. Thank you again for a very concise presentation. WPFW, I'm not sure, Rob, what's the story on who's presenting that?
I'm sorry, Madam Chair.
Please.
Leslie Chair. Grigsby Hubbard, who was a member of our committee, was to present it. He was not at the airport this morning, and I guess we'll just have to pass. We did present this at the last meeting. I apologize.
Okay. All right. I think, again, it's the work of the PFW committee is in the grid, and we've seen the material. So it's not like we don't have any of the material. And if should he show up later, we'll try and squeeze him in and get his comments too. Okay, thank you. Okay, so why don't we move along to WBAI, New York City. And again, we want to thank WBAI in New York for broadcasting today. And we have two people who will introduce themselves.
Yes. Hi, I'm Brad Taylor. I'm a listener.
Get close into the mic. Get right up to the mic.
Okay, thanks. Brad Taylor. I'm a listener activist and general working person from the WBAI signal area. I'm also a native Texan, proud to say, born and raised here.
Okay, okay. We don't have to hold it against him.
But
I'm sorry.
The eyes of Texas are upon you.
But transplanted to New York quite some time ago.
We can't all be perfect.
I've worked concertedly with the WBAI bylaws subcommittee since its inception in March or April, and I'm happy to claim some friends and allies in that group on both a political and personal level. I'm also a member of the Unity Caucus, working busily to assist in finishing the first real draft of the constituency inclusion model for public presentation over the last couple of weeks. And we're happy to be able to present that model here in Houston. Yes. In delivering this report, I'm pleased to join with my friend Eve Moser, and we'll paraphrase liberally from what we think is a very fair and accurate overview of the key points of the work of the subcommittee, which was made by our friend Donna Gould, and we very much appreciate Donna's work and assistance in this. Donna's work, by the way, consists mainly of a written text of a survey of various straw polls taken by the subcommittee of various issues over the months, which was compiled by Jamie Ross, and we thank Jamie also. At BAI, we didn't develop a bylaws draft, but we worked long and vigorously in discussion and development of all the central ideas that everybody has been working on around the country, as well as some that we haven't seen represented in other drafts or presentations from our various sister stations. And I think this work has been productive and useful to the network as a whole. The main themes of agreement I would mention in our workings are as follows: a belief in strong local station boards with governing powers, working interactively with strong national leadership from the PNB, and then, of course, listener empowerment deeply felt in the wake of the coup and the subsequent retaking of our airways, which, of course, we're still engaged in now. The greatest disagreement we experience in New York concerns the various issues surrounding elections, nomination procedures, who the voters are, election methods, diversity criteria. And it's out of this disagreement that the Committee for Progressive Radio, CPR, and the Unity Caucus were born, when some activists decided to essentially work separately from the subcommittee to develop a model which ensures leadership roles for people representing oppressed communities beyond the range of the diversity requirements found in other models. And these people, and this view would extend membership to these communities not tied to monetary or sweat equity contributions to the network. I think I should say here that this is because we feel that the network should be first a vehicle for social change, and that the roots of the pressing needs we see for social change lie in racism, sexism, classism, and homophobia, and that the best and maybe the only bona fide first step in achieving real social change is to ensure leadership roles for those who most critically experience this oppression firsthand. But apart from the development of the constituency model, I should have Eve continue with some of the various other developments in our work.
I just want to say first, my name is Eve Moser. I'm okay. My name is Eve Moser. I am one of the members of the Bylaw Subcommittee in New York. I think I ought to mention right away that it was nice to thank WBAI for broadcasting, but I was told the broadcast has already stopped as of maybe noon in New York, which would have been 11 here. you can read between the lines or whatever. I just want to start out by saying, since hearing everybody else's reports, that I think it's very telling, the difference between a report coming out of KPFA and a report coming from New York, the spectrum of harmony or seeming harmony on the one hand with great dissension and disharmony, which, like Carol, is really, really very saddening. And I think it has a lot to do and everything to do with why our committee didn't really accomplish a whole lot more. And we can all pat ourselves on the back and say it's wonderful what we did, but face it, we're grown-ups. We should have done better. I just want to, just so that it's on the record, so that you all know, since you weren't all there, that the committee has had 22 meetings. We have been anything from 20 to 60 people, but almost, I would say, the vast majority of meetings, there are 30 to 40 people. And that's important, I think, that you know that, because the paltry body of work, you might say, we did come up with, which is represented in our straw polls, I think it's important to know that while they're only straw polls, they were the votes of 30 to 40 people, which I don't think is not insignificant. And we're going to get into what those polls said, and you all should have had copies many times of those straw polls. We had 22 meetings. Two of those were outside of New York in order to try to accommodate people who don't live right in the middle of Manhattan. So we had one in Brooklyn. We had one in Maplewood, New Jersey. There was regular and faithful attendance by some people, and by quite a lot of people, I guess, and some were, you know, often there, and then there were some who were occasionally there. Almost everybody who went pretty regularly to the bylaws meetings and was a participant was a listener. And the exceptions were, there were three lab members who attended. That's three out of a total of 16 or 17, a few staff, and on occasion, the chair of the IPNB herself, Ms. Leslie Kagan. The committee meetings are open to all, in principle, as all the committee meetings were, but I want to just make the remark that I think it can be said that many staff and listeners don't even know about them because they don't really hear much about them on the air. Many of us are saddened that a greater effort was not made to inform the listening audience about the committee and its work. And likewise, it's very disappointing that so few lab members show any interest, at least in New York, show any interest in the bylaws revision process. And I don't think it needs to be said that they are an important element in voting on the bylaws. Several in the committee, although as we know, we didn't come up with a bylaws proposal, we had lots of discussion, lots of disagreement, and we also had agreement. So we discussed several proposals, such as we discussed very much three variations of one-person, one-vote models, one being KPFA's model, two, which I think we're all familiar with, which we see as something that uses choice voting on the one hand and also imposes some diversity criteria. The second one was a variant of that, which was the elections proposal that the Concerned Friends of WBAI Election Committee put out a year ago or more, which is similar to KPFA's model, but imposes no diversity requirements. And third was a model by Paul Sorovel, which is also similar to KPFA's model, but with expanded diversity requirements. And then the fourth one was the constituency model, which Brad has mentioned. During the life of, well, my remark was going to be that during the life of the Bylaws Committee, the constituency model has been presented at several meetings, as well as on the air at WBAI. In the Bylaws Committee, people praised the aim of giving more voice to disadvantaged people, but felt about the constituency model that it needed a lot more concrete explanation of how, in fact, the model would work in practice. As time went on, supporters of that model attended committee meetings less regularly, and they began to meet on their own, apart from the bylaws committee. And they called their group the Unity Caucus. And one last word about that is that the most recent and complete reversion of that proposal, which you will hear later this morning, was presented to the WBAI Bylaws Committee only 3 days ago, this past Tuesday. Questions and comments followed, which helped the members of the committee begin to get a grasp of the specifics of this complex proposal. But I want to note that no votes or straw polls on the proposal were taken in our committee, and to make it very clear that it is a proposal made by a group called the Unity Caucus, and it is definitely not a proposal of the WBAI Bylaws Committee. And I think now I'm going to go back to you because you're going to summarize, Brad is going to summarize the results of the straw polls, and then we'll make a couple of remarks. And how much time do we have?
Just a few more minutes, like just two or three, really.
Okay.
I think I should just proceed with giving some background of some of the decisions that were made in the committee. See how far we can get. Relative to elections, there was general agreement in the bylaws subcommittee, as distinguished obviously from the Unity Caucus, that membership is dependent on and votership is dependent on subscription. But some people argued in the meetings that this was too narrow, that some listeners wouldn't have the $25 and might be homebound, incarcerated, et cetera. And people argue that people in community organizations sharing goals with WI should be given membership free of subscription. There was a straw poll on April 23rd that basically was evenly divided in a three-way split between people who supported this subscriber model and two variants of those who would be more inclusive.
One note about that poll, Donna made the point that everybody should realize that particular poll was very badly. It was early on. It was badly formulated, badly conducted.
There was general agreement for strong governance role for local boards, which would consist of the capacity to hire and fire general managers and program directors, oversight of both, approving station budget, monetary oversight of budget, but development of the budget was one decision that was on which the group was split between the station board doing it and the feeling that the general manager should be in charge of that. Moving to role of station boards. There was a discussion of the right to adopt and amend or repeal foundation bylaws, and the feeling of this body was that no listener should be the only ones to ratify bylaws. Regarding relative power of station boards to national boards as defined, and we were dealing with this as defined by the Spooner Working Draft B from July 25th and Robinson Working Draft A. The subcommittee fairly roundly rejected the Robinson model as giving too little power to station boards and criticized the Spooner model for giving too much power and not spelling out checks and balances between the two levels. In response to this feeling of Bob Lederer and Donna Gould, two members of the subcommittee, presented a fix to this problem that would be a shared power arrangement between national and station boards. Station boards would make key decisions and national boards would enact them, overruling them only if they were in conflict with the mission or if they were a real threat to the foundation's financial stability. Concerning the national board, there was a strong feeling that there should not be appointed seats. We were mixed on members being chosen by listeners or station boards or a combination of the two. We strongly supported the PNB ensuring programming adherence to mission, and there was a less strong feeling that the national board should be able to. There was a discussion about the national board being able to mandate governance programming. Relative to listener empowerment, there were several decisions that were made here, which I think several of which don't really occur in other models. about to propose and ratify by that we supported listener empowerment to propose and ratify bylaws, to propose formal motions and formal referenda, to approve changes in to have sole ability to approve changes in the Articles of Incorporation. There was strong support for that national board decision should be transparent. Some support for that job duties and salaries of various Pacifica staff should be posted publicly. There was strong support that station boards should hold public meetings before national meetings, so to bring listener views to the national board. This is basically Roger Manning's town hall proposal, which I believe is incorporated in Carol's most recent Carol's grid model. And there was a agreement that there should be a bylaws convention every four years after this the adopting of these present bylaws, which and other people, including the Unity Caucus, have felt that it should be earlier and that it should be next year.
One sentence.
I simply want to point out that despite the fact that many of us feel that our committees function in a very crippled fashion, I think it ought to be brought out and that everybody ought to understand how strongly, in fact, we did come, as reflected in our straw polls, come down very much in unity with many of the things that have been said here by the people from KPFA, the things that they have said that they want, that they've articulated so well, the things that are said by KPFA, by KPFT, by KPFK. And we are really, we are very much behind a very strong national, a very strong local, with lots of, and strong listener empowerment. All three things with great checks and balances. I think that that is what you have, the message you have to get out of our straw polls.
Okay, thank you. Thank you. Okay, we did agree also to invite the Unity Caucus out of New York to make a presentation. And I know that they were traveling, so I'm not sure if they're in the room yet. Okay, while you're getting that, then we're also are going to give a few minutes to the Pacific Accountability Committee out of Los Angeles. And Tom, are you doing that? Thank you. And then actually also while Tom's coming up, we hadn't discussed this earlier, but I'm just wondering, I know Steve Pierce is here, who's been actively involved with the affiliates, and to see if you wanted to make a short presentation about affiliate participation. And is Deb Spear here? I thought she wasn't coming until tomorrow, but
she is not. But we do have a proposal and Okay.
So we'll do that. We'll take Steve and then Ted. Okay, after the Pacific Accountability Proposal. So, Tom, it's sitting up here. You want to just introduce yourself?
I'm Tom Camarella. I'm a member of the KPFK Lab, and I'm also a member of the Pacifica Accountability Committee. I'd like to respectfully request, since we're not having one of the reports, could I have more time?
Say that again, since we're not having one?
You're not having one of the reports. They weren't making a report this morning, so that gives us an extra little time.
How much time do you want?
Enough time to read this one sheet.
Okay, great. One sheet. One sheet's worth of time.
Okay. The Pacific Accountability Committee recognized early on in 1995 the importance of good workable and democratic bylaws. Our first draft of local bylaws was in 1997 and meant to stir and promote discussion on this critical topic. Our current bylaws draft is for both national and local structure. We have listened intently to the comments and suggestions made to us in the last 5 years and believe our latest draft incorporates most, if not all, of the major concerns of the Pacifica family. Number one is transparency. Access to information is critical if we want to make sure the stations are not being dumbed down, sold, or mismanaged. We have diverse and intelligent listener sponsors who have been and shall continue to be the best watchdogs to protect this network. We have incorporated many mechanisms on both the local and national level to allow members to have full financial disclosure. to attend and hear board and committee meetings with adequate time and minutes of same, to have access to all information through the World Wide Web, to have frequent uncensored call-in shows and reports to the listeners, and to have a folio again. Remember the folio? Accountability and democracy. This is very important. There must be adequate ways for the members to be heard and to influence policy and leadership. Members can vote for station board members and program committee members. They can recall any leadership position, including Pacific and National board members. The members or station boards can propose bylaws, amendments, and amendments can only be ratified by the membership. Local and national program committees. The network ultimately revolves around programming policies. With a diverse and elected local program committee that is a committee of the station board, policy will be uniformly and fairly administered. The network and local stations will also have a clearer vision of what the members want through community needs assessment. The PNB also will have a national program committee as a standing committee. Now, the relationship between station boards and Pacifica National Board. We have a simple and realistic relationship with power shared between both station board and Pacifica National Board. Since all station board and PNB members must remain on the station board and positions are recallable, they must listen to the membership and adhere to policies. There are no executive committees and none can be instituted. There are 18 elected members of each station board, which includes one union staff and two volunteers chosen by their peers, plus the non-voting general manager and program director. The general manager may be removed by the station board. If there is a general manager vacancy, the station board has power to send general manager candidates to the Pacifica executive director, who may consider other applicants but must be approved by the station board. The PNB will have three members voted from non-staff station board members. And so each station, that would be 3 times 5, would equal 15, plus one affiliate of their choosing. Non-voting, i.e. ex officio members, would be the executive director, the Pacifica Archives director, and the chief financial officer. And they only can have 2 consecutive terms. Now, the last but not least, we have listed the members' Bill of Rights and principles. We list the rights and principles so all can see and appreciate what it means to be an empowered Pacifica member supporting a great network. As a member of the lab, I must mention that due to the plethora of recent proposals, I mean, we've had this mandate for several months, but in the last 3 weeks, we've had many, many proposals and many versions of each proposal, so it's almost like a moving target. Consequently, I and the KPFK lab request that the IPNB wait for one more board meeting to decide on which proposal to be voted upon by the IPNBs and the labs. We believe that that time is needed. Do you have any questions? I want to mention that the current version that was sent out to the IPNB was formulated on September the 5th, which was prior to the KPFK LA convention. We learned some things at that convention and have incorporated them into a new version, which was done on 9/19, and consequently, you can see that new version at www.pacfolio.org. www.pacfolio.org. Thank you. Any other questions?
Thank you.
All right.
Again, we're not going to have 2 questions right now. Thank you very much. The Unity Caucus? Again, I just really want to very much thank everybody for really sticking to the time frame. It's very helpful. So, 15 minutes of the Unity Caucus.
Okay. I'm one of the presenters of the Unity Caucus. I'm Reem Kathuda. I'm Arab. I'm Muslim. I'm from the movement who worked really hard to reclaim Pacifica. But before all of that, I was an activist for general issues of positive social change and also to make sure that the people who are very much the receivers of a lot of local and global policies have a voice to add to the discourse. And I was hoping that by doing that through an outfit like Pacifica, we're able to affect the mindset of the United States people so they make pressure and people can still live. Why I say that is because it is very much some of the drives of the Unity Caucus. This is a time where it's even more crucial than other times that Pacifica shows a leadership in where it's going. Let's face it, Pacifica is not just an entertainment station. It has, in a way, a political mission to ensure that voices that are there to affect positive social change are empowered. The Unity Caucus is very aware of that, and it is very much intrinsically built into a belief of a necessity of self-determination. When Tim Wise talks about racism and how it affects both people that are at the receiving end of it and people that are at the sending end of it, he looks at a room in Ohio and he sees we're mostly white listening to that. We gotta do better. An African-American woman from Ohio rises and says, yes, but we're never involved in the decision-making. And for instance, when we are reached after fact, like in this conference that was held at Columbus University in Ohio, State University, it had a racist background that a lot of the well-meaning organizers didn't have a clue of, but because the people of color of the town were not part of the decision-making, were just contacted after fact, it wasn't clear, and a bad decision was made, which really hindered a lot of the participation of the people that would have been empowered by it. Part of the work of the Unity Caucus was to also ensure that Pacifica functioned within a set of statement of principles which reflects the deepening of understanding its mission as it moves in the 21st century. Pacifica needs to be leader in approaching how can we do better, what is it we're trying to do in progressive movements. And again, the main change that the Unity Caucus has brought to the table stems from the concept that Brad identified, which is that it is racism, it is homophobia, it is classism, it is sexism that makes bad decisions be made. Bad in a sense of killer decisions to different communities. And the second belief is that if we're truly to affect that, we have to not speak in the name of these people, but give them a voice. And the same way as we've talked a lot about giving them a voice on the airwaves, we need to give these communities a voice in the governance of Pacifica. And we need to give it not just by putting a few faces out there that would represent that, but having a linkage, a security linkage, if you would, of these representatives to the constituents that we're supposed to have them represent. So that's more of the concept of self-determination. In the model that we are going to be showing you, we're going to talk about the framework, which I tried a little bit to highlight here. We're going to be describing the model, and we're going to be talking about how it is very implementable. We work to a great extent to reach the details as much as possible, functioning by consensus, which is how we hope we'll be able to function, so that truly, people reach a heightened level when they build decisions for Pacifica. Sirene is going to go into the framework.
Hi, thanks. Good morning, everyone.
Hi.
Slightly vertically challenged. Reem touched on the...
Come closer, really? And identify
How's this?
Yourself.
Hi, I'm Sirene Roberts, WBAI, New York. Claire?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Thanks.
Good.
There are some principles that the Unity Caucus believes in really strongly. Obviously, we believe that the model that we've created is the most inclusive because inclusion is structured in. Inclusion doesn't just happen. As a black woman, I'll tell you, I've been there. It doesn't just happen. It has to be structured in. So we do believe that the bylaws draft that we've come up with provides for that. but there are also specific things that we think are important, regardless of which set of bylaws or combinations of bylaws drafts are actually adopted, and I want to briefly touch on those. The statement of principles, which we hope to supplement the statement that's currently in the Articles of Incorporation. I believe many of you have copies of that. If not, we do have copies of everything available, so please feel free to ask us when we're done here. We want a set of principles that actually talk about the work that, that Pacifica is responsible for. Self-empowerment of oppressed peoples. A list of principles of non-discrimination, affirmative action, non-commercialism, workers' rights, etc. We also think it is crucial that there be an open definition of membership, that any listener, regardless of whether they've had the money to help fund the stations, or whether in fact their physical or emotional or mental condition allows them the time to provide volunteer work at the station, that any listener should be entitled to a voice in the governance of the station to which they listen. They are in fact, that we have three constituencies, and we'll go into a little bit more detail about that. But they include the mission constituencies, the people for whom the work was designed, the people who are in a position to help support the work, either in terms of time or in terms of money, and the staff, the people who actually create the product, if I dare use that term. Okay. So we do want an open definition of membership. Thirdly, we'd like to have a real in-reach campaign, and we call it in-reach as opposed to outreach because we don't feel we're reaching out to strangers. If Pacifica is in fact fulfilling its mission, we are reaching into the communities that we're supposed to be serving at any rate. So we call it an in-reach campaign, and we believe that it needs to be done in a thorough and effective way, and it can best be done with full-time paid coordinators at each of the stations. We're also requesting a very specific in-reach, a three-month, as I said, that three-month in-reach period. And we need volunteers from all walks of life and all philosophies. There are things on which we Pacificans disagree and things on which we do agree, but I think we all agree that we need to reach out and reach in to the to our natural constituencies. I won't go into too much detail about the role and the authority of the station and national boards at this point, but there's specific language within the diversity committee, the Blanchard draft, with regard to how the stations need to be staffed, how the network needs to be staffed to make sure that there is, in fact, diverse participation. We're asking that a bylaws convention be convened 1 year after the adoption of whatever set of bylaws so that we can review the information, see how it's worked, see what we need to change, what we need to retain. We'll get into more detail later about the size and composition of the station board, and I will yield to Margaret Dominique.
Hi, I'm Margaret Dominique of WBAI New York, and I'm going to speak to you about the composition and size of the station board as we see it under the constituency model. Our models see governance as an expanding process in which we should include all members, constituent groups within the governance. We should not just allow for the voice of people who are oppressed just to be heard. We not should not speak on their behalf. Not only should we give them a voice, but we should also give them part of the decision-making process throughout Pacifica. And this is why we came up with all the members of the three constituent categories described, which I'm going to outline to you. In terms of numbers, the station board should comprise 36 members, 36 seats, 36 representatives. And we divided that into three categories of constituency. And they are as followed. The first category being the mission constituent representative category, which will have 15 members. And these 15 members will be distributed through the subcategories of the mission constituency. The first category being people that are historically oppressed and structurally discriminated upon. We speak of people of African ancestry, the Asian and Pacific Islanders, the Latinos, the Native Indigenous, Arabs and Muslim, and immigrants to be one of one subcategory. And to the African ancestry, we have allocated two seats, and the Latino group, two more seats, and one seat for the remainder, which would give a total of 15 seats. And the second subcategory of people who are exploited in the marginalized sector of our society, we've allocated also 15 seats, and we're talking about rank and file labor and unemployed workers, the youth, which don't involve in Pacifica affairs, women, people with disabilities, the prisoners, the lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender community, and cultural workers, which would include artists, the arts community. And under category two, we've allocated 15 seats, which category two would include the two subcategory, geographic constituencies. Category two is the listener constituency group, and that includes the geographic and outlier seats. By geographic, we mean to cover all the regions that from the signal area of WBAI New York. We're talking about New York City, New Jersey, Long Island, and upstate Connecticut. And because New York City is such a large number of listeners, and we've allocated them three seats. And Jersey, the smaller communities, Jersey would be allocated one, Long Island one, upstate New York, Connecticut one. In addition to that, you have the at-large seats, which would be nine. And that subcategory, all other members that are not under any one particular mission constituency will find themselves in. And of course, we feel that the staff constituency is an important segment of Pacifica. We talk about both paid and unpaid staff. And to them, we've allocated six seats, four for the unpaid and two seats for the paid term. This breakdown is because we want to emphasize our goal of ensuring that the constituencies that we've identified be sufficiently representative. And the key constituencies that, as was outlined before, they're the ones that do have a stake in Pacifica and therefore a stake in society at large. So we feel that the governance should include all members of the constituency.
And to go back to the framework of why.
Okay, we're not done yet, folks. We're not done.
To go to the framework of why is because the listener, the general listeners, the geographic areas and the at-large, this is who is very aware, has been plugged into Pacifica, has been working with it, and they absolutely need to be empowered. But let's make sure that we have specified that whomever is represented, whomever is nominated, is somebody who has a proven record in the progressive work. Because it has to support Pacifica. And what this will do is that, for instance, when we say, why the Arabs and the Muslims? Well, because at this point in history, since the break of the USSR, they have been marginalized, they are exploited, oppressed, and in danger. And their voices, from the governance to being on the air, will add to our discourse in Pacifica. But also they will have to put forth the progressives among them, so that we ensure that it's the progressives. It also will protect Pacifica to have that. The workers, they are in the house. and they know what is going on. But then also the mission constituents, they have a stake in the survival of Pacifica. And it will be much harder to come and control a Pacifica board when which it is the constituency that recall or nominate their representatives. And that's a very important point.
Okay, there's 3 minutes left.
I'll talk really fast.
Okay.
I wanted to touch briefly on the registration and nomination process and how you flow from the local the station boards into the national board and what our process is for that. Registration packets will include four specific what we're requesting of listeners. And when we say just to stress a point, when we talk about the different constituencies, we have the mission constituencies, the listener sponsor constituencies. There are listener sponsors within the mission constituency. It's a matter of how people choose to identify themselves, so that we have those 13 subcategories. People may choose to identify themselves as a New Yorker and vote for a New Yorker or vote for an at-large member, or they may choose to vote as a woman and vote for New York. So each person will, in fact, have two votes. You can register for two constituencies. And the registration process is as follows. We'll be sending mailings out to all listener sponsors who we have on the records, as well as having registration packets available in progressive and friendly locations. In New York, for example, we would have it at Liberation Bookstore, Revolution Books, Blue Stockings, you know, the Brecht Forum, the places where progressives frequent, because we recognize that not everyone who supports the mission of Pacifica has always been in a position to support financially Pacifica. I don't know how familiar, I suppose there are many people who don't understand what it's like to really have to choose between, gee, do I want to get to work next week or do I want to eat? But lots of people have to make those choices, so I feel very strongly that there shouldn't be a money attachment. But these registration packets will be available. We'll ask people to provide their name, address, phone number, and to identify the constituencies under which they choose to register to vote. And since we're running out of time, I'll have to fill you in later.
Wow, this is kind of crazy, but I want to just make a... Okay.
Introduce yourself.
Okay, my name is Marianne Dumont. I'm in the BAI listening area. I just want to make a few points. This time that we are in, as we make decisions about what we want Pacifica to be, will only come probably this once. And we are, even here we're trying to talk, and I know the time is a controversy, but we need to take time to see if we can really find the best way to make Pacifica a powerful entity in the coming era. And that's one point. This, I believe that we're constantly talking about hijacking, and this model, in our opinion, it maintains the best protection against hijacking, because we have the most diverse participation, a very distinct interest between the constituencies, and many different perspectives that they bring. It would be very difficult for a well-organized group with a narrow agenda to infiltrate every constituency, and we feel that's a major protection. I also want to say that during the struggle, this last struggle, we didn't mobilize many people in general. Berkeley did, yes. But the other listening areas, in percentage of the listeners were not mobilized. If we put into the governance structures a set of values that helps constituencies and communities to feel that this radio station is theirs, that when the next attack comes and we are coming into a much more intense political repressive era, when that next attack comes, we will be able to mobilize communities better to protect our station. And I just want to say that it's not only that, but as we reach these constituencies and communities, we are actually mobilizing them to political action in general, which isn't that what Pacific is about. And one more thing, very quickly, I just want to say something about the Unity Caucus, because there's been a lot of talk about secretive meetings and ulterior motives. We came together as a very large and diverse group. There have, at meetings, there have been as many as 40 people, and through outreach, many more people have spoken through the people, and we needed to create a space where we could exchange ideas freely, without judgment, without attack. And that's why we came together. We believe that we have worked on something as a group, a very diverse group, and we've come to consensus on all of these points. We've battled things out, and we've come to consensus, and we believe that if we could see on the station boards the kind of work that has been done among us and the national board, we would have an incredibly strong and powerful Pacifica. And instead of having an intellectual ideal of what Pacifica is, we would have a really powerful reality. And I just urge people to ask us questions. Look at it. And
okay,
thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Okay. And then finally, we just want to hear from Steve Pierce on the affiliate concerns about affiliate participation. And I think Ted is also going to say something on behalf of Ted. Yeah, that KFCF, sorry. Steve, can you just introduce yourself?
Sure. My name is Steve Pierce. I'm here on behalf of the Grassroots Radio Conference, or Grassroots Radio Coalition, which back in 1996 was formed by a group of stations that were deeply concerned about what was happening not just at Pacifica but throughout the community radio world. The Grassroots Radio Coalition represents stations that are committed to community media as a democratic process, not as a means of producing a product. And the stations are individually, like the Pacifica stations themselves, unlike one another, and certainly unlike the Pacifica stations. There's a lot of diversity within the Grassroots Radio Coalition. I think as I listen to the people this morning talking about the governance process, it's really inspiring to me to see all these people here grappling with an incredibly complicated issue, a set of issues. For me, my background with Pacifica goes back to the late 70s when I was at a station in southwestern Ohio which aired the Pacifica News, which at that point was just a collection of news stories that were fed over the telephone line. And one of the high points in my life was getting a story submitted to the Pacifica news feed and aired nationally. And I think it's important as we deal with the nitty-gritty of all these issues to remember that Pacifica has been a beacon for people in community media since the late 40s. It's an incredibly important force, and it really is at the wellspring of the community media movement. The people who have come through Pacifica have gone on to other stations throughout the world and have gone on to other forms of media. And so it's important to keep this institution strong. It's about so much more than the stations themselves, although obviously the stations are key, but it's a movement. And we're part of the movement. The affiliate stations are part of it, although you don't necessarily see us. Because these people have gone throughout the world trained and inspired by Pacifica, the people at these other stations were part of the movement to take back Pacifica. We share the values of the Pacifica idea, and we want to be a part of the governance structure that you now set up. We see diversity as a mechanism to avoid the destructive monoculture, a number of people have mentioned that today, in community media. To the extent that public radio has been absorbed by a worldview that is so singular, it's been destroyed. And one of the great, I think, possibilities of a relationship, an enhanced relationship between the Pacifica stations, the foundation, the affiliates, is the strength that diversity provides. People at stations all around the country and all around the world. The affiliates are far more than consumers of Pacifica product, of Pacifica programming. We share common goals and commitment to the principles of media and democracy. One of the key indicators of the crisis of Pacifica was felt out in the affiliate world when it was quite clear that our role in Pacifica was going to be my way or the highway, much like many of you at the stations. And so what we encourage is that relationship be redefined in the process of your bylaws, our bylaws revisions to make sure that the concerns of the affiliates can be heard directly on the board level, and that the affiliates themselves can contribute our strength and our diversity to the continued health of the organization. I'll end just by saying that in very concrete terms, it's difficult to come up with the level of detail that the stations have because we don't know what the organization itself is proposing, the number of board members and so on and so forth. Well, it would be ridiculous to propose, say, 3 board member representatives of the affiliates if there's only 7 on the board as a whole. But if there's 30, well, 3 would be less unreasonable, more reasonable. But I'll say in general terms what I think the stations, who are themselves very diverse, are interested in seeing on a staff level at Pacifica, somebody whose job it is to listen to us and respond, an affiliate relations staff person. And on a board level, some kind of affiliate representation. And I'll leave it at that, and I'll be around all weekend, and I hope to get a chance to meet and talk to many of the board members and the folks here. Thanks.
Thank you. And then Ted, I think, has something on behalf of KCFC.
KFC.
I knew I got that wrong. Okay. Sorry about that.
Yeah, I'm here on behalf of... How do I do that?
Just tilt it.